Blog Talk Radio.
It is time for Two Guys Soccer. I'm one guy, I'm Mike, he's the other guy, he is Stead, and we are here to talk about the beautiful game. As always, we are brought to you this lovely Monday by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. So, Stead.
Yes, sir.
I was a little bit skeptical about the theme music when we first started, but I have to say it started to grow on me.
Yeah, it's growing on me a little bit too. I was like, is this really too, you know?
Yeah, I still think at some point in time we need at some point in time we need to like rebrand and maybe see if we can incorporate some go-go, the music of our area.
Yeah. What I didn't want to do, though, is because, you know, we are two men of African-American descent. I was like, we can't be cliche, though, and go get some trap song or our age, some 90s hip-hop song. You know, I was like, no, that's probably why I think our theme music is growing on me a little bit. I'm kind of like, you know, it's catchy. It's not what you'd expect. And after a while, I'm like, yeah, this song's pretty cool. And it's very soccer-ish. If you know
it
what
sounds
I mean.
Vaguely British.
It does. It has this, yeah. And if somebody asked me what the song was, I probably wouldn't be able to tell them. But it does sound British, and it sounds like something you'd hear like in Piccadilly Circus around one of those nightclubs over there.
Yeah, especially like in the late 90s or early aughts.
Right. Has that kind of that Morrissey feel or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could be completely butchering it, but, you know, it's growing on me, though. Yeah, definitely.
I'm starting to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, the big event of the weekend was, of course, yesterday, Tiger Woods winning his first major since 2008. So, less a question and more of a statement to lead off the top of this show. This is what has happened since the last time that Tiger Woods won a Masters in June of 2008.
Mm.
Back at that time, Gareth Bale was a left back for Tottenham.
Yes.
United had just won the Champions League. Lionel Messi had not played a full season.
Nope.
Spain had zero international soccer tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Pogba was still at Le Havre. Harry Kane became with the youth team player.
Mm-hmm.
Only of the current England squad that played in the World Cup, only Gary Cahill and Ashley Young had made their first team professional debuts. Jamie Vardy was playing for Stocksbridge Park Steels FC in Northern Counties East.
I was going to say, that's a conference league. Yeah, that's a conference championship league.
Yeah, the eighth level of English football.
Mm-hmm.
Reigning player of the year, Luka Modric, had just signed Tottenham from Dinamo Zagreb. Sven-Göran Eriksson's Man City finished ninth in the Premier League. Guess who was their leading scorer that year?
Sean Wright Phillips?
Alana with 10 goals in all competitions.
Alana, okay.
PSG had finished sixth. Of the top teams in the top in Europe, only Sergio Ramos and Marcelo with Real Madrid and Giorgio Chiellini with Juventus were with their current teams.
Wow, you did some real research. That's amazing.
Yep. Brian McBride was the captain of Fulham.
Yep.
Borussia Dortmund finished 13th in the Bundesliga. How many teams do you think have not been are in the Premier League that were playing in the Premier League at that time and have not been relegated?
Seven.
Dead on. Can you name them?
Yeah. The Big Six and Everton.
Yeah, the Big Six and Everton. Chelsea City, yeah. Everton, Chelsea, Spurs, United, City, Arsenal,
Everton,
and
Spurs,
Liverpool.
United, yep. Yep.
They are the only 17
teams. Because the funny thing is, it's funny because in the same vein, when I was looking at the table after today's Arsenal match, I was going through, and it just kind of struck me. I said, you know, it's amazing that they were talking about the number of teams. This is back when it was still just the Big Four. At this same time that the last time Tiger was able to win a major championship was that the Big Four dominance was, of course, bad for the Premier League, but also that newly promoted teams were going to having an even more difficult time staying up. And mm-hmm. now it's become really a Big Six, because one of those teams that they looked at that was there, that they're never going to go down, was Aston Villa. And we see Aston Villa. They don't look like they're going to be smelling the Premier League anytime soon. So you're looking at the Big Six teams, which now you see Manchester City and Spurs have kind of jumped from a team that could be in a relegation battle on any given year to a team that's basically going to stay Premier League. And then every other team has been really, really fighting for a position at some point in the year. Because don't forget, back in these days, the strong mid-level teams were Stoke and Sunderland and, you know, and Everton. But Fulham at that time was also a solid Premier League team that had a pretty good run up in the Premier League. So that could easily fall down in the championship. And Fulham's already back down again. So it's now looking like there's more separation between the haves and the have-nots in the Premier League, and you just have Everton kind of just sitting in the middle. So it's definitely been quite a change since that time. Absolutely.
Well, 13 of the teams that were in that year's, of course, have been relegated since then. Three have returned.
Yep.
So in the Premier League, that in joining Big Seven, those seven teams, Aston Villa, who we talked about, Birmingham
mm-hmm.
City,
mm-hmm.
Blackburn, Bolton, Derby County, who had the
worst Premier League season, yep, 11 points.
Fulham, Middlesbrough,
mm-hmm.
Newcastle,
mm-hmm.
Portsmouth,
yep,
who have been into administration twice,
right?
Since then, Reading,
don't forget about
Sunderland,
Reading, yeah, and don't forget about, did you say Blackpool?
Blackpool wasn't in the league in 2008.
Oh, in 2008, okay. Yeah.
Reading, Sunderland, Wigan, and West Ham. Amongst teams that have cycled through in the last 10 years, Blackpool, who else? Blackpool was up for a couple
mm-hmm.
of years.
Hull City.
Hull City, Swansea, Cardiff.
Yep, Swansea. Yep.
Norwich City.
Have any of the Sheffields come up? I don't think they've been up since.
Sheffield United was relegated prior to the 2007-2008 season.
I knew it was close to that time, yeah.
And
yeah,
them along with
since.
Charlton Athletic and, surprisingly, Watford were the three relegation teams that year.
Mm-hmm.
Charlton Athletic and Sheffield United have not been back since. Sheffield
no.
Wednesday has been back to the playoffs and the playoff finals, but that's as close as they've gotten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you talk about the separation, but more than half the league has changed.
Yeah.
In
absolutely.
The last 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's good? Do you think that's bad?
Yeah. You know what? I think we're of like mind on this. I don't know. I really don't know. I think for the global brand of Premier League, it's probably good that you don't have a big two or a big three, that you actually do have six teams that can compete for championships. But, you know, I don't know. I kind of wonder, is it difficult for some of these teams to really cement a fan base? I think in our area, in the D.C. area, that you see people who can become fans of Bournemouth or of Newcastle, or, you know, we've seen Southampton jerseys around. And so it's, you know, you'll easily see a Crystal Palace jersey. So in that sense, I think it's good because you're having so many clubs gain exposure, but it may be a little bad because there's teams with a lot of history that since the expansion of the Premier League that people from the United States really aren't going to – I mean, who really knows about Nottingham Forest and their story, you know, and how that's a team that's won European championships and yet they no one really knows who they are in the, over here on this part of the world. So if a team like that that has a long history was able to stay in the Premier League longer, it might be a bit better. But again, I'm blindly throwing darts against a dartboard. So it's I don't know. I can see it both ways.
Part of me likes the fact that you do get rewarded for success, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep.
But part of me realizes that success also comes from stability.
Mm-hmm.
The ability of these teams to strategize and plan long-term transfer strategies that will help them is dependent on knowing that they're going to receive a certain amount of income
mm-hmm.
per year. And to get a solid shirt sponsorship deal, which could be the difference in between, you know, it could be tens of millions of pounds,
mm-hmm.
only comes about when a brand recognizes that the team that they're supporting is likely to have that sort of exposure
right.
over a long term, right? So
mm-hmm.
it makes it hard to grow a brand on a global level if you don't know from year to year whether this team is going to be there.
Right.
Why would I want to support, you know, a Sheffield – I'll pick a team that's – you know, why would I want to fall in love with even though they are – a great story, a team like Wolves who are having
mm-hmm.
a great season. And if I was just
mm-hmm.
starting to watch now, I might fall in love with them. But then
right.
you root for them for 3 or 4 years and all of a sudden you're pretty much unable to watch them on any given weekend again
mm-hmm.
because they're back down in the championship. And the championship,
right.
I don't know if we said it, but we've meant to. The championship is the black hole of football.
Mm-hmm.
You go down and it is all gone hard to come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even a team, even two teams like West Ham and Newcastle, both
and Newcastle.
Of whom had West Ham was relegated in 11. Newcastle's
mm-hmm.
been relegated twice.
Twice recently.
Pretty massive teams.
Right.
And we've seen a team like Newcastle, because they've been relegated twice, really struggle financially to get a foothold and become
mm-hmm.
successful. I think they should be a team that should be in the top half of the table with the resources that they should have with the size of the fan base. You know, you got a 55,000-seat stadium up there in Newcastle.
Right.
It's pretty big.
Right.
You know,
and you see the same thing that happened to Leeds, because Leeds also has a huge stadium, and they haven't been able to get back close to the Premier League at all recently. They've been down for a while.
Now,
so, yeah, I agree.
Leeds is going to be interesting because it looks like Leeds is in position to come back up this year.
Correct.
So this would be the first time in pretty much a generation that they've been back and that there'll be Premier League football at England Road.
Right.
You know, Leeds are sitting in – they're sitting in with six games left for with 4 games left, it looks like they're
mm-hmm.
sitting in an automatic qualifying position. They're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
And then you got, you know, Norwich City and Leeds are sitting in the automatic promotion spot. You got Sheffield
mm-hmm.
Wednesday, West Brom, Villa, and Bristol City all sitting in the playoff spots. Middlesbrough and Derby County are just 2 points back of the playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Bristol City and Derby County both have a game in hand. They're on 42.
Right.
So, it's possible, you know, it would be nice to see the Blades back. It would be nice to see Aston Villa back. It would be nice
mm-hmm.
to see West Brom back.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see any one of those teams back.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see Sheffield United back. It really would. I mean, there's a couple of great local documentaries that have been done on the city of Sheffield, the town, and the rivalry between the teams. yet the camaraderie between the rivalry there as well. How they, you know, they've done things to help raise more funds for their shirt sponsors for both clubs and stuff like that. There's this kind of like, there's this really, really great neighborhood rivalry between Wednesday and United. Yet there's also this kind of like, but we're still Sheffield and it's us against everybody else as well. So that's delightful. And so, yeah, it would be nice to see, yeah, any of those teams. You'd love to see Aston Villa. You'd love to see Sheffield. I mean, personally, I would like to see Leeds back up. That's one of the first teams I ever really heard of when I was a kid and trying to learn more about the international professional leagues. And of course, our first exposure is naturally going to be England. So yeah, I think personally, the nostalgic factor would be there. It'd be great to see them come back up. But also on the flip side, I know we have so much access to world football. That being said, I wouldn't mind if there was some sort of app that you could just download and I could watch some of these championship games. You know, especially that 4-team tournament they have at the end of the season for the most, you know, the most lucrative game in English football to see which is the 13 to get promoted. It would be nice to see just catch those games because those games are played with a lot of heart.
I do believe they are on the ESPN Plus app.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but they might show the championships, like the tournament.
They were, I thought for a while they were on BN.
Yeah, they might be.
But I'm not 100% sure. But it has always been those television sponsorship deals. And, mm-hmm. you know, the international broadcast rights for the Premier League are going to be coming up again relatively soon. The mm-hmm. national broadcast rights just went out. So the international ones, we'll see again if NBC Sports can. I love what NBC has done and how they brought it to the multiple platforms and you now mm-hmm. have more access to more games on a regular basis. Not a huge fan of the Premier League Gold package, but you know what I miss? I miss Fox Soccer.
Fox Soccer Channel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that was where you used to be able to get not only the Italian league, but they would have Scottish league games on.
Yeah.
They'd have championship games on.
Dude, they would have Fenerbahce versus Galatasaray on there, you know?
And
you get a Porto Lisboa game.
Yeah, you could get some of those ones, and it seems as though there isn't a network anymore that has bought up the – BN was trying. I don't think mm-hmm. that they were successful. I know there is John Skipper, the former head of ESPN, is involved mm-hmm. with a streaming app that's been going around
mm-hmm.
buying up rights for online streaming.
Mm-hmm.
I think they may have purchased some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, more and more, I think this time around, like Hulu, Bleacher Report, Amazon are going to get more into that. My prediction would be that you're going to see more of those. But my fear is that they're going to be subscription-based packages.
Right, exactly.
And I'm not going to want to pay $30-$40 for even for the full year to watch four games.
Exactly.
With Celtic Rangers or the occasional Galatasaray, Fenerbahce derby because it's 2:00 in the morning and I can't sleep.
Right, exactly. And you can really get bogged down with those little, because it's like, it's just $2 a month, but then it's
mm-hmm.
$2 a month here, $5 a month here, $10 a month here, $12 a month here. And next thing you know, you're paying a cable bill again. And, you know, it would be great if there was, like, I remember waking up in the middle of the night, turning on Fox Soccer Channel and seeing the Nigerian Premier League on,
mm-hmm.
you know? And they and, you know, it's a real, the picture wasn't the best. And it was a little fuzzy. It looked like there was a piece of gauze covering the camera. But, you know, it was fun. And you could see the atmosphere of those different leagues. And, yeah, it would be really nice to have a channel like that back that you didn't have to pay – you didn't have to feel like you're being nickel and dime to watch various leagues. But then on the flip side, though, I want these leagues to get their money, too. The more money that these leagues can get, the better it is for the players, which is good, which is the better it is for everybody.
Yeah, so, I'm 100% with you. I think, though, that there needs to be some conscious effort on, at least over here, to pick up some of the rights for some of these leagues that we don't see. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's not a huge market for the SPL, but I think that both the SPL and the networks could come up with something that would be mutually beneficial. Certainly, the Scottish teams might like to have an American market back, because right now the only way that you can watch them is to stream it. And the guys get the subscription to Celtic TV and broadcast it that way, because that's the only way that you can see those games. Mm-hmm. I miss being able to see that. Now, I may be one of the few people who still has a soft spot for Scottish football, and I'll accept that. I always have liked watching Celtic play. But when you're dealing with an 8-time champion who looks like they're going to run away with it again, and there really is no competition, I can see where where there isn't a lot of appetite for that.
Right.
But it would be nice to be able to get some Portuguese games, maybe even an Eredivisie game or something, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Eredivisie has great teams. And you're talking about a league, too, that really cultivates that young talent. And they get those young boys out there early. And they're playing against big competition. And you're looking at Feyenoord, Ajax, AZ, you know, there's some good rivalries going on there. There's definitely some good football to watch coming out of those leagues.
Yeah, look no further than Ajax and the work that they did last Wednesday against Real Madrid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It is a bit of a shame that a team with as storied a history as Ajax has had to accept that they're just going to be a selling club.
Right.
But you see what they're doing. And I know it is not the same team that played Manchester United in the Europa League back in 2017. But some of those players that you're seeing now are the guys that were the core of that team. And there's something to be said for that and that experience and what we're seeing as a result of it. So, you know, Frank de Boer got them started, but they've really come on. We've watched them grow. We know that the lights of the light are going to be gone at the end of this season. And it'll be interesting to see the next crop of players that comes through.
Yeah. Well, you know, and they also have, you know, what I like about those types of clubs too is a lot of the guys who leave and can come back and have a real, I don't want to say a swan song, but, you know, have a nice way to end their careers playing in a really competitive league. I'm, you know, speaking of, like, you know, Klaus-Jan Huntelaar, Daley Blind, go there and play with their not only childhood, but kind of their boy clubs, the clubs they started out with, and help cultivate the young players who they know eventually are probably going to get called up to one of the big clubs throughout Europe. Since there's so much talent coming out of the Netherlands. I mean, the place is, you know, they're churning them out like some of these old diploma churned schools that used to turn out college basketball players, you know, year after year after year. So, I it would be nice to get more content, definitely.
So, moving on, what do you think of the MLS this weekend?
You know what? I will confess, I did not get a chance to catch too much of the MLS games, but you know, the United needed a win, so that was important. It's kind of clear, at least with United, that they're a team that really, really is probably relying a bit much on Wayne Rooney. The game against, I think it was Minnesota last week. It was pretty obvious that they were a little out of sorts. And Acosta basically just said, you know what? I don't care what you guys say. I'm not passing this. Not passing the ball. I'm just going to keep the ball at my feet whenever I get it, and I'm going to try and do everything. And when he does that, he gets frustrated when things don't go exactly his way. So, you know, I worry about that moving forward. I was talking to a guy who's a big DC United head, and he was just saying that his concern is that the team still doesn't have, they may have a lack of depth, and you don't want to burn Rooney out too early. Because Rooney may be, what's he, 33, 34 now, but he's been playing professional soccer since he was 16. So you got to be careful of that. But, you know, it's still pretty, things still seem pretty straightforward. I mean, LAFC is still cleaning up the league, but LA Galaxy's hanging around. Seattle Sounders are hanging around. Those are all clubs that have won championships. So, again, I'm still trying. It's hard to know, to have any real ability to predict anything until we get to June, July. Then I feel like things are going to make a bit more sense.
I maintain that there are basically two seasons in MLS, if you want to look at it like this. There's the season up until the typical winter break, you know, when you get around the Gold Cup break, the World Cup break, you'll take 2 weeks off for tournament break during the transfer window. And then there's the season after it. The MLS is totally different once the weather changes.
Right.
And to be honest, it changes 3 times over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. The MLS over the course of the summer is a different league.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to stay in contention.
Mm-hmm.
I give DC United credit. 3-2 win over away at Colorado. Anytime you pick up points on the road, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Their initial early schedule has been pretty favorable.
Yeah, it's been pretty soft. Absolutely.
You know, you can look and say right now, their one game against a team that's in the top half is, the two would be Montreal, whom they drew with, and LAFC, who
drug them through the mud.
Atlanta United, NYCFC, both teams we expected to be good, not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Real Salt Lake, 8th. You know, Orlando City, lower half of the Eastern Conference. Yeah, the schedule's going to get tougher over the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this weekend they've got NYCFC. Wednesday they're in Columbus. The following Sunday they're in Minnesota before coming back and playing Columbus at home. And then they've got a week off, and then they've got Sporting KC on May 12th. This is going to be a little bit more Wednesday after the Sporting KC match, they've got to travel to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's about to get really, really interesting quick.
Well, especially, too, you look at the teams under him, you know, you're looking at Philly, and Philly's schedule starts to soften. You know, they have home to Montreal, go at Vancouver, but then they have New England Revolution and FC Cincinnati. So there's a chance that Philly can make a move, definitely, but moving up a little bit, because those are teams that, you know, they could conceivably, I mean, New England Revolution's got 4 points. They're sitting on one win. So the teams above them, I'm mainly speaking of, you got to be careful. You got to be careful because even though you're only 7 games in, look at Toronto. Toronto's only played 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say they have 7 games and they win them both. They're now in first place. So the landscape can change completely. So what's going to happen when it gets nice out? What's going to happen when it gets beyond nice? And there's one thing that I don't understand about DC United specifically is that you have a team who has to play home games in Washington, D.C. in the summertime when it can get to 90 degrees pretty easily. And you're wearing an all-black uniform. I can't walk down the street with a black T-shirt on in the middle of the summertime. So I don't know why that bothers me. That's always made me go, are you sure that's a good idea? That you're going to wear black during the day on a Sunday in July? It gets a little hot out there.
Well, Philadelphia Union's always worn the navy blue at home, so I guess
but
I never really paid attention.
There's
never really
a difference between navy blue and black. I don't know why. I know I'm going out on a limb here, but there's a difference to me. It just seems like you can wear navy blue, but when you wear black, I just feel like you feel 5 degrees hotter no matter what.
Yeah, and it does get hot in those stadiums. And that's part of what it is to play in MLS. You know, you can't – they never have wanted to schedule a whole lot of home games for teams like Colorado, D.C., Sporting KC, Philadelphia in the early part of the season because the weather can be iffy.
Oh, like, absolutely. Especially in Colorado.
I remember plain as day back in, I want to say 2015. Yeah. 2015 going up to the Philadelphia Union season opener, and then it snowed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can remember a couple of games where going to a couple of games in Chester where it was at freezing or below freezing at game time.
Yeah.
And that's not a good fan experience. That's why I've always argued with the people who say MLS needs to go to a European schedule.
I had the same argument. And even when I first started when MLS first started, of course, I'm thinking of it from a competition standpoint and playing. But then you got to really think about it. You can't play soccer outside in Boston in February. You just can't. You know what I mean? It's the weather is so unpredictable. You're playing once a week games too. You rarely have a midweek game unless there's something else going on. It doesn't make any sense. You can't. The weather is so unpredictable where you have a team like the Orlando City and Montreal who are in the same division, same conference, and you have to understand that the United States has the weather of five different countries going on at the same time. Whereas if you're in, what about Sweden or Norway? They take a break for quite a long time in the winter months.
Yeah, they don't. Sweden and Norway, the Scandinavian teams don't play across the winter.
They don't? No, they don't. Because they can't.
They play. Yeah, they play. It's only been recently that Russia has started to do that.
Right.
And to be honest, that's Russia. We all know they're
Russia. It's Russia. I remember Andre Arshavin playing games in England in during the winter break and hearing the people complain about the weather. And he's like, you guys don't, this is not cold. You want to go playing a game in St. Petersburg in early March. Go try doing that.
But I just don't know who's going to go. Who's going to go to these games?
That's the real question.
And you can have, you talked about you have the weather of five different countries. Again, you have Montreal and Orlando City playing in the same. You have Vancouver, where they hosted the Winter Olympics, in the same conference as LA.
Yeah. Where they hosted two Summer Olympics.
and future team in San Diego. Like, for real.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado, I suppose, how would you cycle through Colorado? It's against Houston and Dallas.
Right. In Colorado, you can wake up in Colorado and there's a blizzard going on and it's 60 degrees by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You have no idea what's going to happen in Colorado.
So I've never been a fan of that one.
No, I don't think, and it's just also, no one's going to go to the game. It's hard to get me to go to an indoor sporting event if it's really nasty outside. So why in the world would I go watch a soccer game if it's really, really that bad, especially for an upstart league that's still trying to get butts in seats and get viewership up? It doesn't make any sense. And
look,
we're all competing for the same eyes.
I don't go to NFL football matches that I have to sit outside after October.
Yeah. I went to one game the Redskins are playing the Bears, and for a playoff spot. It was 19 degrees outside, and I'm standing in that. I mean, I'm sitting in that stadium going, I will never do this again. They're like, oh, what about the fan? No. There's enough idiots who will go out there and take off their shirt. They can have those seats. I am not going. No way. No, I'm not going either.
So I've always been against it, but that's my diatribe on that. So elsewhere in MLS, did you see Kaku and his red card for New York Red Bulls?
I heard about it. I did not see it, no.
Kicked the ball at a fan in KC in injury time after having conceded a late equalizer that left them stuck on 6 points. Mm-hmm. But kicks ball, injures a fan, looks like he's going to be off the field for quite a while.
Absolutely.
Atlanta United picked up their first win of the season with a 2-0 win over New England Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So big for them.
Big for them. Yeah, they desperately needed a win.
And coming off of a nice break, so good for them. Mm-hmm. They've only played 5 games this season,
mm-hmm.
but they're sitting on 5 points, tied with Red Bulls and NYCFC.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, it is an exact reverse of what the top of it was last year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm really surprised by this. I know that NYCFC lost at Villa, you know, New York Red Bulls with Tyler Adams. You know, mm-hmm. Jesse Marsh just got promoted, the former New York Red Bulls coach just got promoted to full-time manager of Red Bulls Salzburg.
Oh, cool.
He did his time as an assistant with RB Leipzig and now has taken over the head manager's job in Salzburg. It looks like Red Bull's going to move him through that organization, and he'll be on to probably the mother club in Leipzig in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta United really stuttering out this year. This is the first time in a regular season game and over a year that they scored more than 2 goals. So big on them.
Yeah.
Maybe possibly getting the offense working a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether this is a case of a slow start that, you know, it's a long season. It's a 34-game season. Should we worry too much if they're getting out and how they look the first 6? But I think once you get into the next 2 games, once you get to about 8 games, you know, a significant portion of the season is already gone.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
It's time. By then, I know, like, if your start is that poor and you're sitting 5 points back, you're 8 points back already, that's a lot to make up.
Yeah. And that's when you start needing help, too. You need other clubs to start losing. And, you know, you don't want to be in that position. But, yeah, I mean, we're already beyond 25% of the season once they get to 8 games, you know. So it's Atlanta probably is, you know, you're seeing that Almiron was a maybe even bigger part of the club than anyone may have thought. So
how much of it was Almiron? How much of it was Paco Martinez?
Yeah, the coach, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, and I'm not 100% sure that you can separate them.
Right.
I think a lot of it has to do with Frank de Boer's style of play, which requires a lot of intricate passing and building out from the back, but teams have started to figure out you just stand in front of them, you mm-hmm. take the ball off of them, hoof it back downfield, and make them start over again.
Right.
It was not successful outside of his time at Ajax when he made it to the Europa League finals.
Mm-hmm.
It has not proven successful.
Right.
Whether he was decided to play a more direct style or whether New England Revolution are just that bad remains to be seen.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be the latter because New England Revolution they look pretty poor. They
were a fringe playoff team last year.
Right, they were. They were. I believe they were just right below the line of demarcation there. But they're sitting on one win, 4 points. I mean, it's again. And also, they're the only team in the outside of the top, outside of the playoff picture right now that's played 7 games. All the other teams are sitting on 6 and 5 games. So that can change in an instant for those teams. But you're sitting on you're at 7 games, and you're sitting on what, 4 points?
Yep.
I don't know. And also, they're not scoring any goals. it doesn't look good at all for them. That might be the first team where you can kind of go, we can stop talking about them, you know, New England and Portland. But Portland also.
Portland, I was definitely going to put Portland with 1 point from 6 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not looking promising up in the Pacific Northwest.
You can pretty much just count Portland and New England out at this point. And, you know, Colorado, I mean, the West is definitely way more skewed with the points than the East is. The East, you're looking at, you know, you got to basically say anybody from New York City FC up. Still has a reasonable shot. You're just looking at points per game. They're all around 1 or, you know, 8.5 or 8.5 points, or excuse me, 0.85 points. But then you go over to the Western Conference, and, you know, Vancouver is at, you know, a third of a point a game. And Colorado and Portland are at even less. Those are low, low, low returns on investment right there. And yeah, it's looking like the West may figure itself out pretty quickly.
I think the West is going to figure itself out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was clear that the power of MLS was in the East.
Mm-hmm.
The East had the best teams. And no disrespect to LAFC, no disrespect to Seattle Sounders, but it was pretty clear from the word go that Atlanta United, NYCFC, and New York Red Bulls. Were the best team. The year before that, it was again Atlanta, a competition, NYCFC, New York Red Bulls, Toronto FC.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To be fair, I think we expected a lot more out of Toronto FC than we got last year, given the season that they just had. And I was all ready to write that, you know, the power. It's clear that the power of MLS has shifted east after years of it being concentrated in the west with teams like Seattle and, you know, LA Galaxy, Portland. You know, it really looked and that's actually kind of discounting the work then that FC Dallas and Houston Dynamo were doing as well, because those were pretty strong teams, but they just weren't at the same level as Seattle, Portland, and LA Galaxy. And I was all ready to say, well, that trend has changed, and now the power's out in the East. I'm not 100% sure that's the case. I may have written that off too soon. Mm-hmm. While certainly we said in the past, you know, DC United, Columbus, Philadelphia Union, all really, really, really good teams. You know, we think Red Bull, we think NYCFC, we expect Atlanta United to still be good teams, even if they have gotten off to rough starts. They could be there. That there could be kind of this dogfight there, and that there's a concentration of solid teams. LAFC and LA Galaxy are really, really, really starting to run away with this from the looks of it.
Yeah,
now, LAFC picks up another win, 2-0 over Cincinnati. LA Galaxy, Philadelphia Union went out there and you know, bless them, they did the best that they could. Picked up a penalty and a bad red card, but it was 2-0 inside the first half, and I don't think that they ever really were in a position where they could make that into something other than what it was.
Yeah, and you got to figure that the battle may be for just who are the two buys. But I doubt there'll be much of a playoff.
There's only one bye this year.
That's
only
right,
because
they've expanded the playoffs to seven. So,
and it's a single elimination tournament, so there's
right.
only one bye, which
right.
could be interesting. I mean, you know, it takes nothing for a team to get hot, and that's the beauty of knockout football in a one-off,
right. mm-hmm.
is that anybody can get taken out.
Right.
But my experience watching both LAFC and LA Galaxy thus far this year is they look the finished articles,
mm-hmm.
whereas none of the teams in the East quite look fully formed yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they still look a little preseason.
I'm not even saying that they look a little bit preseason as much as it looks like you can see where the holes are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, okay, you can see where their struggles are going to be. You
mm-hmm.
can see that Union are going to get on a run and they can pick up 3-4 wins in a row. But
mm-hmm.
they're going to struggle with good teams because they still lack the proven, dynamic, consistent goal-scoring threat of a Zlatan or a Wayne Rooney
mm-hmm.
or Carlos Vela. They don't have
yeah.
those. They don't have that consistently dynamic player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Columbus has got Giassi, who's doing a great job, but what is he really? You know, we talked about how much DC United relies on Wayne Rooney and
Leonardo
Acosta. Whereas when you look at LAFC right now, you just look at them and you say, all right, I don't know what to do to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, LA Galaxy may not have the same overall talent, but Zlatan is Zlatan, and if your offense is just give Zlatan the ball and let him score,
right?
In MLS, that is not a bad way to go. Like,
yeah,
enough, Manchester United rode that offense to a champions to a Europa Cup win,
right? But Zlatan now is just he seems to be a player that really thrives on good delivery. You know what I mean? Like his finishing is impeccable. And if you can give him the ball where he can one touch it or he can two touch it and he can use, I don't think I've seen someone with the ability to hit a side volley the way he can hit a side volley. I mean, it really is amazing, especially for a guy his size. And so I think that LA should have Galaxy should, of course, you know, ride that as much as possible. But I would hope that it's not just give Zlatan the ball, but like not in a position where he can really thrive. You understand what I mean? I feel like they will be better served if they continue to work the wings and try to give him. You don't need to give him, you know, vintage Mesut Ozil of old delivery, but something where he can get a little bit of space and just take a couple of touches and bang. And that's exciting too. That's great Zlatan football right there.
But I kind of differ a little bit. I think that he's not a mobile striker. He's not a Wayne Rooney or a Lionel Messi who's gonna weave in and out
mm-hmm.
of traffic and
well,
stuff
he
like
can't.
That.
He's 6'5". I mean,
he's
just gonna
he's
be 6'5". Hard for a guy
he
that big.
Was never the most mobile person.
Mm-hmm.
He has one of the most tremendous strike radiuses
mm-hmm.
of any striker that I've seen. And by that,
mm-hmm.
I mean the vicinity in which you can put the ball and he can get a hold of it and do something with it.
Right.
They used to talk about it with NFL wide receivers, catch radius.
Yeah, yeah, catch radius,
how
yeah.
ridiculous Megatron's catch radius was.
Right.
And that you didn't even need to be perfectly accurate. His catch radius was so massive that wherever it was, he could go out and get it.
Right.
That's what I see with Zlatan.
Exactly.
He's got this tremendous strike radius where if it's in any general vicinity, he can get it and put it on net.
Mm-hmm.
He's also able to physically create space in ways that other people can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is pretty well, you know, he's a big guy,
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty well balanced for his size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he I mean, it's funny that people are still deceived by his agility, because he's been displaying this for decades now. How well he controls his body, because you know catch radius. I mean, when I was talking about with like you just give him a delivery of something, he can make space for himself because as you said, because he's a larger guy, but he doesn't need it to be perfect. He just needs it somewhere near, and then bam, he can fire right on net, and it's pretty much as well as anybody.
And there are very few things in anything that are going to strike as much fear into somebody as Zlatan Ibrahimovic running at
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that a lot from the Philadelphia Union players. They were almost a little bit intimidated by him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he would say, as should be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their ability to ride that and to not have the sort of foil to him that LA Galaxy has to Carlos Vela
mm-hmm.
may ultimately be their undoing.
Mm-hmm.
If Zlatan is, for whatever reason, not healthy, remember, what is he, 37 now?
Yeah, I believe so.
Expecting him to keep up what he's doing over the course of one of the biggest slogs in professional soccer, it's going to be a lot. And where are they going to get the goals? Where are they going to get the service from when he's not playing? I also think that Sebastian Legette getting back into that team with an injury has proven to be an aid to them, because that's a midfield presence that you were missing all of last season.
Mm.
I like them, but I think of them as a slightly more dangerous team than what I'm seeing out on the East Coast, which is not to say, like, if they come out here, would I be surprised at all if DC United beat them? No.
Right.
But I do think that on their day, they're a better team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. But again, like you said earlier, let's see what happens in June. Let's see what happens after the little all-star break. Because, yeah, it is almost a tale of two seasons.
And then what adjustments teams make when they get, think about how the transfer of Wayne Rooney and the transfer of Zlatan Ibrahimovic
mm-hmm.
changed the fortunes. Now, Zlatan signed a little bit before the transfer window started
mm-hmm.
because he was released from his contract by Manchester
right.
United.
Right.
Wayne Rooney being brought in over the summer, how that changed the fortunes of DC United.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's something that I've never seen before, where one player can come in and turn around a season like that. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it is. It's absolutely amazing.
But we talked about it last year, the likes
yeah.
of what if what if an Arjen Robben comes over
yeah.
this season after the Bundesliga is done? What if Antonio Valencia comes over?
Yep.
How could it change things? All right.
Yep.
So before we move on and go over to Europe, and one other quick, in a little bit of U.S. men's national team, I want to make sure that we give a special thank you to the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. They will be open for the Champions League games tomorrow. They'll have them on the big screen in the back, and you can come in. I heard there's a big soccer match coming up this weekend. I'm not sure if you knew anything about that.
Well, which one are we talking about here? There's a whole bunch of big soccer matches. Granted, I think everything's a big soccer match. So, let's see.
Yeah, but there are a couple of big matches coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I think I'm looking at...
I was thinking about they met the Manchester City game.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you want to get up and get a cup of coffee, because they got great coffee there. We've done this before, my friend, where we've arrived early and just decided to have coffee before we imbibe in the cold kegs that are down below. So if you want to check out the Spurs, hopefully, like this game is. I don't. These games are difficult to watch because I want both teams to lose.
So a draw would be a wholly appropriate result in that case.
Yes, it would. Though that's still a point, and I don't even want to give them that. But but yeah, that's. I think that's the big game of the weekend coming up. Plus also, Spurs played well, but you're not going to have Harry Kane anymore. So. You know, and you also played well against a team that has already been relegated and is having one of the worst seasons in the history of the Premier League. So, you know, I don't think you should get too excited that you put up four against Huddersfield, even though at home of all places, where you have a brand new stadium and it's real exciting to play there. I get that, but now you're going on the road to Manchester City. So.
I would be excited, though, that they were able to get out of that Champions League with a 1-0 win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we'll see what happens on Wednesday.
Exactly.
You know, that one is the most interesting. You expect, even though Spurs have the advantage, without Harry Kane, with the game being played at the Etihad, that the advantage still lies with Manchester City mm-hmm. and the way that they've been able to just take apart teams. They look like a team on a mission.
Yeah. And you got to play them twice, too, in a span of 3 days.
Yeah, that's a rough one for all involved.
Yeah.
But that should be interesting. Sunday morning starts early. They'll be open early for Celtic and Hibernian. And then you got Manchester United traveling to Goodison Park to take on the Toffees.
That is a huge game. That is a huge, huge, huge game. It turns out that's not the easiest place to play. Who would have known? And Everton's playing relatively well, I would say. You know, they in their last five, they have a draw, two wins, two losses. They are, they're not really in a relegation battle or anything like that. But I know they would love to be able to finish above Wolves, considering a newly promoted team. Even though they are having a relatively magical season, you got to hope that you know they're trying their best not to finish behind Wolves. I think that's a tough, tough game, especially with the pressures on Manchester United for this game because a win bumps you ahead of Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And Chelsea, I don't know what's going on with Chelsea. They are – it sounds like any press about that team is just about who are they going to sell first in the transfer market. So – and I don't believe – and I'm not sure. I think their transfer ban is being upheld. I know they're appealing. So what are they going to do? I don't know. So Manchester United's got to capitalize on this. And they've got to be sitting there hoping that they don't lay an egg like Arsenal did.
But, you know, well, Arsenal got out. Arsenal and Man United today and Saturday mm-hmm. had what I like to call get away with it wins.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Both teams were outplayed. Mm-hmm. Arsenal outplayed by a team with 10 men.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they were made to look foolish on that field. I mean, it was embarrassing, I thought. And the fact that the only shining light on that game was just the fact that that was their first clean sheet that they've had on the road all season. So, you know, you better thank Koscielny because he's really the only reason why you all didn't give up that game because they looked bad. They looked really bad. So, but, you know, a win is a win. Get out of there, you know, wipe your feet and keep it moving.
I think in both cases – it was hard to focus on playing when you've got big games coming up midweek.
Absolutely.
You know, Manchester United could be a little bit excused for looking past West Ham for Barca. Mm. This could Arsenal, because their season is in part going to be defined on whether or not they're able to make it past Napoli and into the Europa League semifinals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I still maintain, I think that is their best hope for European qualification.
Yeah, well, I'm eating my shorts a little bit because I was shocked by Arsenal's play against Napoli. Napoli had their chances to easily to draw level, but Arsenal left a lot of goals on the table. And all that game did for me was made me just really look at the Arsenal ownership and go, I don't understand why you could not get a deal done with Aaron Ramsey. And I know Juventus is playing him, going to pay him a lot of money, but I felt like they let him walk way, way, way too easily. And you're just looking at this player going, he's their best midfielder right now, and you're letting him go for nothing.
And who are you going to get in to replace him?
Yeah, I mean, look, Guendouzi is a nice prospect, but come on. You're hunting around these 17-year-olds down in Brazil. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't. I don't see who's going to come in. It's just, you know, I see Arsenal fans online talking about, well, he's fine. We got this kid. We got that kid. I'm like, you're really, really, really fooling yourselves. You're really fooling yourselves. I get it. It's the Homer fan who wants to make sure that they're constantly supporting their team. This is a bad move. And I think I hope I'm wrong, but this is going to have a ripple effect. And if this team is lucky enough to get in the Champions League, they could be bounced before the group stage is even over.
Let's hope that doesn't happen in the game.
Yeah.
Unai Emery, the backing that he needs to keep them competitive in the top six.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to see where they could fall off and we could be taking Liverpool like slide. The same with Chelsea, the same with Manchester United. So, elsewhere in League One, they took one on the chin.
Oh, they took a huge L.
5-1 against Lille. Yeah, not good for them. Juventus.
And they almost lost to Strasbourg the week before.
Yes. And so that's two tries to capture League One, two failures.
Right. Like they're trying not to win the league, man. Come on. It's League One. It's not. You guys should have won this a month ago.
Yeah. We suspect that they'll get it again on the next try. Juventus failed to in their bid to win the Scudetto in their first time, taking a 2-0 loss away to SPAL. And at the top of the Bundesliga, both teams managed to hold serve. So Bayern Munich maintains a 1-point lead over Borussia Dortmund. Celtic look like they're winding it down in the
Scottish. They're going to wrap that up. They're about 11 points up. Maybe 11 points up. Yeah, it's pretty much done.
So for the most part, the top leagues held serve. Chelsea losing 2-0 to Liverpool dropped them down. But for the most part, it is as you were.
Right.
We've got Champions League football coming back. Barcelona will take a 1-goal advantage back to the Camp Nou against Manchester United. I think the shocker of that game was that Barcelona, to me, did not score more. But it's possible that you could get another PSG-like turnabout, but I just don't see it.
I got a buddy at work, Manchester United fan, and he had an interesting take on this game. He said that he goes, what I don't want is I don't want a really close loss. And because he said, you know, if they can win this game and stay alive, great. You know, that's of course you're going to want a team to win. He goes, but if they're going to lose big so they don't have to worry about it anymore and they can focus their attentions on finishing in the top four. And so after the game, I kind of walked by his office and peeked my head in, and he just looked at me and he just shook his head and just said, you know, he just said, this is what worries me is – you win 2-1, you're in. You know what I mean? You win 2-0, you're good. So can they go to Barcelona and win 2-0? Well, who knows? But no one thought they could go into PSG and win either. So what's the chance?
I mean, you win.
Are they going to push for it? Are they going to really push for it? Or are they going to you know, you can't do everything. You just can't. Are they going to really, really push for it? Or are they going to see if they can, you know, keep something in the reserve and then try to, like, get a late surge in the game to see if they can sneak one through and maybe get by? Or are they going to go, you know what, let's focus our efforts on making sure we get in the top four? I don't know.
I don't know.
This game.
I think Ole's instincts are to go out and try and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Barca are perfectly comfortable with only the one away goal.
Yes,
they know how to win these ones in Europe. They've had plenty of experience in the Lionel Messi era at doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Camp Nou is not Parc des Princes. It's not Old Trafford.
No.
Playing them in the Camp Nou. I remember this scenario back from the 2007 semifinals when Manchester United went and they beat AC Milan 3-2 at home. And I remember saying, you know, okay, well, they got the win, and they're going in with the goal advantage. And talking to my buddy, and he said, no, you know what? You are not anywhere close to as good as you think you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because playing AC Milan in the San Siro is a completely different animal.
Mm-hmm.
The fans will not let them go backwards. They will not let them defend. They will go forward, and they will, and that is exactly what they did. And they tore them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see something. I could easily see this being like a 3-1, something like that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I thought Man United did just about as well as they could have to limit the exposure. You know, Scott McTominay had a phenomenal game in the midfield. He finally is starting to show like he is a legitimate player and a legitimate option there, not just tall replacement for Marouane Fellaini. So, focus him. He got a rest at the weekend. Ole likes him and he wants to keep him fresh. But that's an interesting one. You know, elsewhere, you know, Ajax travels back to
Juventus.
Juventus to Italy, to Juventus Stadium. That one's level at 1-1. Again, it's level, but Juve are going home. And you always favor the home team in the second leg in these sort of circumstances, especially with Juventus. But that isn't to say that we didn't see Ajax go into Real Madrid, into the Bernabeu and get a win. They are a tricky young team.
Absolutely.
But
and they're playing with, but they're playing with nothing to lose, too.
They're playing with house money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, Liverpool seems to be pretty much in control over Porto.
Yeah, I don't see much of an issue there. I think Liverpool probably just gets a 0-0 draw and just goes back and just moves on to the semifinal. I don't see much happening in that game.
And we touched already on Manchester City and Tottenham back at the Etihad on Wednesday.
I got the feeling that though, I think a little bit depends on this weekend. But I think no matter what, I think City is just going to drag him through the mud, man. They're just going to take him over a barrel. I don't see Spurs having much of a shot to semifinal here. I mean, barring a catastrophic injury to a City player during the game, I just don't see Spurs able to go in there two games in a row. Like, let's say Spurs win the Premier League clash this weekend. Let's say they just win. Let's say they win 1-0. I see that rubber match coming in. I see Spurs beating them I see City beating them 5-0 on Wednesday.
Well, okay, so the Premier League clash happens after the weekend match, right?
I thought it was before.
No, I thought they played this. Yeah, they play on Wednesday, and then they play again on Sunday.
Oh, right. Okay, I read that wrong. Okay, my bad.
So the
Then that means City's sitting there looking at him going, all right, well, you guys beat us last time. Here we go. So I can still see a 5-0 game.
Yeah, they're at the Etihad twice in a couple of days.
Right. And I read that wrong. I read that as they were going there. Actually, I think this is my brain thinks tomorrow's the weekend because it's probably wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah, would that it was. But, I think this is one where there are – four clear favorite, and those four clear favorites are going to move on. Not that surprises can't happen, but that's kind of the way that I see it going this year. And if you had had to ask me at the beginning of the year, I would not have been at all surprised if those were the four semifinalists, right?
No, me neither.
Yes, Real Madrid is a bit of a spanner and PSG, but I am not at all surprised that these are, and Bayern to a certain extent, but not at all surprised that it comes down again to Liverpool, City, Juventus, and Barca, if that is the final.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, you could exchange out one of the England teams for another semifinalist, but I don't think anyone who would really would be shocked at all by these teams being at this point in the season. You're looking at Juventus, who's basically now can solely focus on Champions League. They don't even need to worry about Serie A anymore, and which
they haven't had to worry about Serie A since September.
No, they haven't. So, which leads me to believe that they're probably, I think you got to give them the biggest shot to win it all, especially with the Champions League king, with Ronaldo playing forward. But of course, you know, I mean, it depends on what the draw is, but I mean, I'd love, let's just say that what we're thinking
they
is correct.
They already did the draw for the next one. So if it is, it'll be,
Is it going to be Juve Barca or Juve City?
Juve Barca has City. Juve would have Liverpool.
Okay.
Liverpool Juve doesn't Barca the line.
Yeah, so you're not going to see a Juve Barca semi, is what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay.
No, I don't think so. All right. Yeah. So before we get out of here with the last couple of minutes, I don't know if you caught this. They did the draw, or they announced the groups. There was not a draw televised for the this summer's Gold Cup.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things that they changed to bring it more in line with other regional tournaments. They added extra time in all the knockout stage games, and they changed it so there were no more mid-20 roster changes. So the 23 you go in the tournament with are the 23 that you get out.
Okay.
So the groups are Mexico, Canada. Group A is Mexico, Canada, Martinique, and Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Group B is Costa Rica, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Bermuda.
Mm-hmm.
Group C is Honduras, Jamaica, El Salvador, and Curacao.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Group D, U.S.
Mm-hmm.
U.S., Panama, Trinidad and Tobago, and Guyana.
Guyana, yeah. Is this so this is going to be a top two teams move on scenario?
Yep.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, it's going to be Mexico is definitely going to go on. I know nothing about Cuban soccer. I would assume that if this was baseball, that would be a different story because, you know, how could you not know about Cuban baseball?
But well, they're ranked currently, by the numbers, they're ranked 174th in the world.
Right. And I believe Canada's in the 80 range.
78.
Yeah. So you're looking at, you know, Mexico, Canada's probably going to move on relatively easily in that group. I think the group that would have the most question would be the Costa Rica, Haiti, Nicaragua, Bermuda group, simply because you never know what's going to happen with Haiti. I mean, both of us know several Haitian people, I'm sure, and it's a shame that the you know, the history of that country is very, very, very trying to think of the right word. It hasn't led to a country that could have a lot of economic success, I'll put it that way. But the athletes that come out of that half of that island of Santo Domingo is pretty amazing. I mean, you have to agree with me there.
They've made their fair share of hexes.
Yeah.
By the numbers, they are the second ranked team in there. You know, Costa Rica would be the favorites to win the group.
Absolutely.
Then you got to choose one of most
Haiti
likely
Nicaragua. Yeah.
Haiti or Nicaragua. Bermuda qualified out of the Caribbean tournament, they're sitting at 175 in the world.
Yeah.
So by the numbers, the most competitive group is actually Group C.
Yeah.
Honduras is ranked 61st. Jamaica's 56. Remember,
Jamaica
have been to the last two finals.
Yeah. Yeah. And off of the United States, they just thumped him the last time. That probably is, thump's probably a strong word, but losing
well,
to
Jamaica.
Well,
they beat us in the semifinals 4 years ago. 2 years ago, we beat them in the finals.
Right.
But that Jamaican team is actually hosting a game, too, in Jamaica.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Which is cool. So Honduras is 61st in the world. Now, again, the World Cup rankings don't necessarily tell an entire story because, unfortunately, for a team like Jamaica, who did play second in the last two CONCACAF Gold Cup tournaments, because they didn't qualify for the Hex, they haven't played a competitive match since the last Gold Cup.
Yeah.
So they don't get an opportunity to necessarily get, or they haven't played a lot of competitive matches since then.
Right.
The types that would bump them up in the rankings. But it is a team with some players, you know. Of course, one goes immediately to the goalkeeper, Andre Blake, Alvis Powell. They have some players. Wes Morgan, of course.
Right.
They have some players there who can make. So Honduras, Jamaica, El Salvador is 71st, and Curacao is 82nd.
I mean, no, Curacao, you know, is another, you know, kind of a baseball country, but yeah, they got some talent down there.
Mm-hmm. But I do believe the vast majority of their players end up playing for the Dutch team.
The Dutch team, yeah, exactly.
Because they're technically, they're an overseas department, so I think most of their best players end up playing for the Dutch team, but somehow they're actually listed as a FIFA team. Like Martinique isn't even considered to be a FIFA team. They're not eligible to play in any competition other than the
World Cup. French citizens.
Yes.
No, Curacao, their kind of independence is weird. Because I don't believe that they even have the same level of autonomy as Aruba, even though they were both part of the Netherlands Antilles. So I'm not exactly sure how their independence lies, and because the players easily can just go be Dutch citizens and play for the Dutch team.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the way Suriname used to be.
I am intrigued a little bit. At first blush, though, when I read it, I was like, oh, man, the group of death in this tournament would be Group D, the U.S., Panama, TNT, and Guyana.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at it, you know, Panama is – the generation that got them to the last World Cup has started to retire. Blas Perez, Godoy, Gabby Gomez, they're all retired.
Mm-hmm.
They're a goalkeeper. They're all retired.
Mm.
So this is a young team. TNT, I think, had some really great players. I just feel like that, you know, they're in a transition too. It is uniquely set up that it's, of course, always set up so that Mexico and the United States can play each other. And
right.
If the U.S. gets out, they have to play the second place team in Group C, so that would most likely be either Honduras or Jamaica. That could present a little bit of a tricky matchup on the road to the quarter. I feel like the U.S. definitely has a tougher road to the finals than Mexico does. But it is keenly set up for the U.S. to play Mexico in the finals. But look out for Canada. Alphonso Davies was the star of the last Gold Cup. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he comes back and puts on a show. And Canada may be one of those sneaky teams that is young, they've got good players, they're not much made of soccer in Canada, but I do feel like that's a team that should be considered to be a legit threat to make a World Cup qualifying, for the final round of World Cup qualifying, the Hex.
Yeah, and you have to give their women's team, I think you got to give their women's team some props because they've been playing really well in the region as of late. And You know, rising
tide.
Well,
the women's team
set.
Is like top. The women's lead, the women's team is like top 10.
Oh,
in
yeah.
The world.
And they have some of the best young players in the world right now, the women's team. So
yeah,
that's so. I just think that bodes well for the men's team. It's not always going to be hockey, and but you're looking at the branching out because, you know, Canadian basketball has really taken a big step forward in the past 10, 15 years. So it's good to see Canadian soccer having guys that are, you know, playing for Premier League teams. They know, even though, you know, it's Cardiff City, but they have players in Turkey, they have players in Sweden, they have players in Serbia, so Scotland, so you know
they have
they
a player who just got
Belgium.
Signed. They have, and then you also have Alphonso Davies, who's on the books at Bayern Munich. So I think that's a team that's going to make some steps forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting tournament. I mean, it doesn't come up until June, so we'll have plenty of time to talk more about it. But I did want to bring up those groups before we got out. So, as we have again, these 90 minutes just seem to fly by.
They really
and
do.
It is fun. So, we touched on it a little bit. Anything in particular that you are looking forward to watching on this lovely Passover / Easter weekend?
I'm really looking forward to the Man City Tottenham series that we're about to see. That's going to be exciting. The title race in England is, even though it's a two-team race, it's better than what you're getting in a lot of other national competitions throughout Europe. So I am looking forward to that coming up. I think that this is really the best part of the season coming up right here. There really isn't much in the relegation scene right now. That's I think that'll be figured out much quicker than normal. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm also, I am quietly looking forward to the Premier League season, ending, simply because that's when I shift my focus much more to MLS. And I was totally turned back on last season. So I think there really isn't anything that's like super, super big coming up right now. I think now is a good time to just sit back and just enjoy to see how things finish out. I think that's going to be fun. I think the next big, big thing we'll be talking about will probably be the transfer market. Because that's always a thing, especially as the season winds down.
It's already starting to get interesting. Reports today on this ongoing, never-ending, will-not-be-able-to-talk-about-it saga between Paul Pogba and Manchester United and Real Madrid was that they won't even start negotiating until for anything less than $170 million, which and they're scheduled to talk to Mina Raiola at the end of April. I think that he's going to be hard-pressed to leave.
I agree.
You don't want to start a new manager's tenure, especially one as popular as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, by stripping away his best players. I would expect that if Ed Woodward has any idea of what he's doing, he gets contracts negotiated with De Gea and Pogba especially. And there's even talk now that they may, and if it's not too far gone, offer the $200K per week that Ander Herrera wants him as well. So interesting development there. One thing I am going to do, because Manchester United doesn't play until Sunday morning, gives me a chance to watch some other leagues on Saturday. And going through, it's probably not as competitive as it has been in the past, but it was a fun game for me to watch. Fiorentina and Juventus, which I mean,
and those games are on ESPN Plus. I could easily watch. I often put those games on in the background, you know, but I should probably pay attention to them a bit more. Granted, it's usually with my 3-year-old running around, but yeah, I am glad. I know we talked about this a while ago. I'm glad to see the Italian league getting a firm platform because you can watch all the games on ESPN Plus.
Yeah. I remember just years ago when I was just watching around, and I have a friend of mine who's a diehard U of A fan, and I mm-hmm. used to watch them when the Italian games were on Fox Soccer, and mm-hmm. just really enjoying watching Fiorentina and Juventus. Now, that was back when Fiorentina had the likes of Luca Toni, and they have not – they've been up and down since then. But that's always a good game to watch. So that's a bit of nostalgia there. May try and catch Bayern and Werder Bremen. See if Bayern can stay on top. It is interesting how this league – how this season has shaped up with so many – of the competitions being done basically before the calendar goes into May.
Yeah.
That, you know, there aren't those types of, do they need to, like, oh, I want to watch this because they need to win it. And if they don't, I need to see if they win. You know, Barcelona's pretty much sewn up Serie A. Juventus and PSG, as we've talked about, are basically one win away from mathematically from closing those out.
Right.
Most of the leagues have been decided. It's only a matter of following the Premier League action to see how this weekend is going to shape up.
Right.
Pretty good idea what could happen, but if it plays out that way. But it is a good opportunity to catch some games like that and just watch and appreciate the greatness and the pageantry and the occasional buffoonery that is.
Yeah. You know, I'll throw in one more thing that I meant to touch on this today, but it completely slipped my mind as we usually do on this show is just kind of like the player of the year discussions that you're going to start getting. And I'm seeing a lot of traction for Raheem Sterling. And I will probably talk more about this next week, but I don't have an argument against that right now. So kind of want to throw that out there as something else you're kind of – because I tend to not like these kind of awards because it's such a team game. But because of the way he's carried himself this year in light with a lot of the issues going on outside off the field, I don't know. I have a new respect for him.
Yeah. As much as I have developed a new respect for Raheem Sterling, and I think he's having a wonderful season and he's really established himself as a – important. Remember, he was – for a while, split in time with the likes of Kevin De Bruyne and Leroy Sané.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really claimed that wing position as his own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think
been on 17 goals, too, I think.
Yeah. Raheem Sterling has a legitimate argument to make if the following things happen in the calendar year. One, they win some sort of treble.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great summer with England in the Nations League.
Mm-hmm.
And those things happen.
Yeah.
If not...
I'm solely speaking about just the Premier League awards.
Oh, the Premier League awards, yes.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the FIFA Player of the Year.
I think
it's more towards Messi, but...
Yeah,
no,
well, of course.
I call that
the Best Player in Spain award, so...
As far as Premier League, PFA Player of the Year, I think that's a good one. But the other part, as I recall, unless they've changed it, don't they vote for that like insanely early season?
Yeah, they do. I like there's still four games left in the season and they will have already had the ceremony. So
yeah
they do it
like,
really
they vote
early.
For this almost during the winter, which I think at that point in time may preclude him from winning it and it may go to somebody more along the lines of like a Harry Kane.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when that, but I know that there was a whole lot of buzz when N'Golo Kante won it with Chelsea, and it seemed like the buzz helped him win at the end. But of course, I don't know when they vote. I could totally be wrong. Of course, I'm just following what they ever print out. But that's just me. But yeah, we'll touch on that later.
We are up against it again, as always, just how I like it. Thanks again to producer Paul for keeping us on the air. Thanks again to the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and entertainment, for keeping us broadcasting. Thanks to you, my man.
Thanks to you, my man.
As always, this has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We did all right this week. We'll try and do better next week.